about 4 years ago, the Mishki broadcast started to expand. You played up in Duluth, I believe somewhere in Wisconsin. Was it Mankato? It kind of had its own little mini network.
Yeah, there was a little mini network. And I'm not on any of those.
Right, now you're just in good old St. Paul. Yeah. And there's even a time, and maybe it started with Fallow's article and the Atlantic Monthly, but it seemed you were gathering more national attention.
Yeah.
And you even had, and you've said this yourself, you don't know how it came about or why me, why it was you, but the Mishki broadcast was up for national syndication.
Yeah. Yeah, which turned out to be... which turned out to be a...
national flop.
Well, it was not a national flop because it never got there. It was a flop before it even happened.
Didn't it actually start?
No.
I thought it did, but they were just airing repeats because you were out.
No, I never... it might have gone for 1 week because
right.
That wasn't me live, so I can't
even say it was all recorded.
I went down prior 2 days prior to its start. But
I remember you were on the air up to that Friday before it was supposed to happen. I believe you were on the air that night.
Syndication, everything that's happened to me in radio, I've never seen coming. You know, I didn't see that I was going to get into radio until I found myself sitting next to Don Vogel. I didn't see me getting my own show until all of a sudden I wasn't with Don Vogel. I didn't see becoming a funny guy on the air until I watched the seriousness thing go down the tubes and me realize I wasn't any good at that. I didn't learn how to do this well until I spent a lot of time doing it. And when syndication came, I was just as ignorant and just as oblivious to what the hell it really meant. But try and understand that when someone comes up to you and says, do you want to be syndicated, and you don't know what the hell that really involves, it is important that you learn what that involves before you say yes or no, because I assumed syndication meant I just keep doing my job and somebody somewhere out there just puts me on a bunch of other stations and I just keep showing up here on University Avenue and that's that. And it was one long, strange trip. How did it start? It started with someone from a place called Jones Radio Network calling me up wanting to take me out to lunch. They wanted to syndicate my show. Oh, I don't want to change my show. I want it to be a St. Paul show. You can keep it just the way it is. Do it just the way you want to. Oh, but gosh, I don't know. I don't want to do a bunch of big national ads. I don't like a lot of chain operations. Well, you don't have to. There are other things we can get around that. Everything I said, they had an answer for. Okay, I guess if everything's going to be 100% the same and all I do is just drive down this little road to my work every night just like I am now and people magically make everything happen behind the scenes, super D-freaking-duper. I said that to her. I said, super D-freaking-duper. And I took her head and I mussed up her hair and I wrestled her to the ground. And so I went to my boss. And I said, this Jones company wants to syndicate me, not realizing that that's not how you do it. You know, the Hubbard said, well, we'll syndicate you. And I said, oh, you guys can do that? I didn't know what the hell was going on. Oh, so I went back and told her, no, they're going to syndicate me. Well, 6 months went by, and I thought, hey, am I syndicated yet? No. Oh. I wonder when I'm going to be syndicated. And what I realized was it's a long haul for them, too, because they don't have a track record of syndicating people, and they weren't sitting around doing nothing every day saying, gee, what are we going to do with our day? Boy, I wish we had Mishki or something to syndicate so we could get busy with something. I mean, they were swamped with their own work. And after a while, I said, can we do that Jones thing again? Because they said they'd syndicate me. And so then they said, well, we don't normally team up with other corporations, and this is really unprecedented for Hubbard. And I said, well, you guys weren't syndicating me, and you said you were gonna, and it didn't work. Well, how about hooking up with them? Well, what happened was flights and private jets over to New York, back here, down to Denver, talking to people, lawyers flying back and forth, contracts growing from 15 pages to 70 pages. I mean, just mind-bogglingly complicated this whole game is. And again, I was this guy who thought, eh, you just all of a sudden are on another station and nothing, you know, some guy flips a switch. It's a freaking switch.
Yeah.
And I think what wore on me, and then this went on for another year, as everything was ironed out, and then there was talk of, well, what about merchandising? Merchandising? Yeah, there's going to be merchandising. Well, what the hell does that mean? And then there's, you know, I didn't have a lawyer. I didn't have an agent. I took all this on, and it was too much for my little pea brain with its damn depression susceptibility. And it just was too much. And I remember as it got nearer, there were these roundtable discussions with 25 people around the table, people who flew in from New York. And, you know, there were advertising people. And I realized this person's going to be making a living off me, and this person's going to be making a living off me. And if I fail or succeed, I either put food on this person's table or not. And these advertisers are going to want me to fly out, these ad salespeople fly out to New York to talk about what accounts nationally I'd be willing to do. And it simply wore me down. The negotiations, everything over time just wore me down.
So were you thinking going as it got nearer and nearer, like, I've made a mistake here? Or no, were you afraid to say anything because it had come this far?
Well, that one came on fast.
Okay.
That one came on fast. But again, I was getting the physical symptoms first. See, the thing about masked depression, which is real important to know, the physical comes before the mental.
Okay.
So the physical symptoms, that's why, see, if it came mental first, if I was down first, then it would be so easy to see it as depression because you'd say, well, why are you down? You don't have any physical symptoms. Must be depression. But you get physical symptoms without psychological symptoms. You just feel pain.
But you're still glad
you come in and do your show and you can separate it. You feel good in the head, but your body hurts. Body hurts. You feel like you got beat up. And I was feeling that pain, but I wasn't connecting it with the depression then because I was, first of all, it was different pain. It wasn't the same pain as the last bout. That's the funny thing. The pain moves and changes. Sometimes, you know, one time it'll be a head thing and the next time it'll be stomach and you'll go, oh, this is something different. This isn't the depression because that's a head thing when I get depression. No, now it's elsewhere. And it even feels different. Even if it's in the same spot, it'll be a different feeling of pain. You know, there are dull pains and sharp pains and throbbing pains. And so it's really hard to get a sense of, well, is this the depression now? Or is this just, or do I have a backache from mowing the lawn? Or what the hell's going on here? So I realize now that the pain was saying, hey, here we go, getting ready for the big one again. You're going to fall. You're going down. We're going to give you the pain first, and then we're going to clobber you in the head and pull out all the plugs, and you're going to disengage mentally, and we are going to have a fun ride. But I didn't, I was busy getting ready for this big syndication, and I can be as oblivious as the next guy and check out on what all is going on in my body. And so that one, the last night, a Friday night, I went home from work in a fair amount of pain. And then in the middle of the night that night, it was a gigantic wave. It was like a huge wave coming over me. And it was like the dark clouds rolled in, the circuits. There was the short circuiting, the complete. By morning, I was basket case. I was down, and I knew it instantly. Got up in the morning, and it was, you know, the bus had run me down. It was over. The whole thing was over.
Did you right away link this then with the syndication?
Oh, yeah, I couldn't help it. I didn't want to, but I couldn't help it. You'd either have to consider it the greatest coincidence in the history of man, or you'd have to accept it, which was very hard to accept and very hard to, it was very embarrassing and very hard to call the boss and very hard to tell all these hardworking people who had spent so much time on this that they're working with a freaking broken machine. And so that was that. And of course, I thought at the time, well, this would be a good time to fire me. This would be a fair time to say, you know, Mishki,
see ya.
This is a strange ride with you, cowboy, and maybe we'll get another person. You know, everybody in this business who does a show is messed up in the head a little bit, but I tend to be more than most.
Okay.
You know, everybody has their little quirks. God knows, you know, Sushre has his neuroses and his strange little bizarre psychological quirks, and Jason Lewis was a freaking hypochondriac, and, you know, he was a... he was an oddball, and Bob Davis has his problems, and we're all odd.
Bob Davis is insane.
He's insane. He's nuts. He's out of his mind. The guy's gone. But, you know, you got to kind of be a little nuts to do this. You know, most comedians have depression. I don't know. Someone ought to research the connection there. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Okay, so here comes Monday. Syndication starting.
And this was Saturday morning. Saturday morning it was over. It was over.
You mean it was over set?
Saturday morning I made the calls. It's over. It's done. It's finished. Forget it. The whole thing was killed.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's over. Yeah, it was over.
Well, I didn't know that. I thought you actually like went into the syndication. They were just airing repeats, and then
no, I was a basket case. I was done. I mean, whatever they were pretending on their side, saying, "Oh, you know, maybe magically it'll be back in a week." Hubbard's knew it was over.
Okay.
And maybe they let on the people in New York, thinking, "Oh, maybe he'll be back." But I mean, on this end, they already had too much practice with this. They might have been telling themselves, "Maybe he'll be back," but I knew it was over. And,
okay, so it was on Friday, and by Saturday morning, you knew.
I knew, and the public, you know, I made the calls, and it was okay. it was done.
How do you feel now about that whole thing, about the syndication never coming into fruition, and would you ever, ever consider something like that in the future?
Yes, I would consider syndication because it was the way it was done. See, I learned so much. I will never go into this as blind as I was then. And I learned so much about how to do it and how not to do it. The way to do it now, if it were to be done, is first of all, with the Hubbards, not partnering with another company. This is a wonderful organization where I feel very comfortable and where I know all the people. And it should happen here with Hubbard okay. Broadcasting. Secondly, it should happen organically with, instead of this long year and a half build up to one big day of now you're going national, boom, it should just be, you know, a city here, a city there. The same way that little mini Minnesota network was, where it just kind of grows as people become aware of you and be interested in trying you out. And not the big fanfare or not the gigantic contract and the huge negotiations. I got to get an agent or an attorney or something. I can't take on all that and still do my show. I'm not strong enough.
Okay. Sorry, I had another question here. I was thinking along those lines.
I'm sorry you have another question, too.
Yeah, I've got a few more to go.
Okay.
So syndication. I'm going to have to edit this part out. I'm trying to pick up my line of thought here.
I think you should leave this in. It shows your human side. You're not the machine that so many people over the years have thought you to be.
Well, thank you, Tommy. I still can't think of it, so I guess I'll move on.
.org.
Oh, I know what it was. It was if you were, say you were to go national in the future, syndication.
Mm-hmm.
Are you afraid of it? The only fear I have about it is how do you keep the, and I assume you'd want to, maybe I'm wrong on this, keep the local feel, keep the St. Paul.
Oh, the same way Garrison Keillor does. If you listen in Arizona to Garrison Keillor, you are listening to a Minnesota guy in a little Minnesota town. If you're going to be listening to the Mishki broadcast in Miami in the future and I'm syndicated, you are going to be hearing a St. Paul guy in St. Paul, Minnesota. And that's where the show's going to come out of, and that's the feel the show's going to have.
But I call into Mishki now. I can get on in 6.3 seconds.
That might change.
You have a national show that does become somewhat popular. You got to wait 45 minutes to get on the line.
That's true. But think of the...
You know, Joel's going to pass out before he can get on the air.
The regulars will get a special number. But think of the pool of quirky, unusual folks I could draw from nationally. Think of the people I could find, the people who would call in, the characters.
I never thought of it that way.
Oh, you got to think of it that way. I would uncover some of the greatest human beings living in the United States. They would call me. They would become regulars, and they would become the new great characters. It would be wonderful.
So Minnesota doesn't have the corner on the eccentrics?
No, but we are supposedly the eccentricity capital of the U.S. I've read that in a couple of publications, but... No, we'd get some. Imagine the guy with the deep Southern accent who might become a regular, who has a thought, a way of thinking so different than anyone you've ever met before that just to listen to his mind work is pure entertainment. And they're out there. We just gotta find them when the show is blasting further. But if it doesn't happen, that's fine too. I never saw it. I'm very, very aware of how fortunate I am to be at a job where I am relatively happy and my talents are utilized. I read stats that 80% of Americans in the workforce are dissatisfied with their job. I am not. So I have to be grateful for that and not need to be the next Larry King to be happy in this job. So if it happens, it happens. If I stay 10 to midnight in a little town in the Midwest and fly over land here, that's fine too.
So if you have your way, you foresee a long future right here at St. Paul at KSTP?
I keep thinking that surely there's another career out there for me, but then I say, what other field would I ever find? Really, this is the crux of it. This field utilizes all the talents that I have. There aren't any I can't employ in this job. And every day, all the talents I have can be called upon to work together to make this show. And that's what you look for. You find what your talents are, where they are, and then you hope you can find a field where they will be utilized. You don't want to be someone saying, I'm at a job where I'm wasting my talents, or I'm at a job where they're not using what they could of my talents, or I'm at a job where what's asked of me are things that I'm not good at. How horrible, especially for one third of your life to be to operate that way. So I can't get caught up in this bigger thing. I have become very comfortable from the get-go with the notion of late night being perfect for me. A lot of guys want drive time. That's an ambition I don't have, and that helps me to not have that idea of success, that success is working a drive time show. Why not continue in that healthy way of thinking and not think of success as national stardom? I just want to watch out for that kind of thinking that is common in this country and can get you in a lot of trouble, that bigger is better thinking. You want to watch that. We saw with Walmart that sometimes isn't true.
Yeah, I think you're great locally, and I've always had the feeling if you ever did go national and were syndicated, the show would go well and you'd be even a bigger success. I mean, I think the comedy, the humor, the wit, the compassion you have with people, with callers.
The only thing that would make me really want to be national, the one thing that I think would be very positive, I would love, as I learn more about ways people can heal, I would love that to get out all over this country. I would love the things I'm learning from all these different people around the world that is not available to the average person because the average person doesn't have the time to research it. I would love that to get out to more people. That's the one great thing that could happen.
True.
I just think there's this whole underground, and I don't know that that's the right word, but there's this whole underground world of information that is so hopeful for people with various ailments and illnesses, and I just wish that could get out to more people, because I see a lot of suffering, and I will call it needless suffering out there. Now, I couldn't do that every night, obviously. I would get bored, as sure as you would, and I don't do it every night. But when you have a forum such as this, and you have an opportunity every now and then to do something good with it, you ought to, especially in areas that interest me. This medical research stuff is like a little hobby of mine, and I think it's from my own, from having chased an illness and knowing what it's like to fight an illness and to have people not know a lot about it and have people have to tell me things that aren't, or people to have people tell me things that turn out to be not true, and have people tell me things that turn out to be detrimental to healing from it, and to really learn. Before I ever had this, I thought you got sick, you went to a guy, the guy knew what it was, and you got better. And the guy was generally the guy in the lab coat, you know, with the medical license. And I am fascinated by what I have learned about the human body and about healing. And it affects, what I've learned can help every single person out there. But the thing is, I'm not the healer. I'm only the messenger. They're right. out there. I just can point people toward them, and that's what I'd like to do more of.
Okay.
Now, on a national scale, I mean, you're talking how many more thousands
that you're reaching
could be helped. That's the thing that would be great about it. Whether or not there are 1,000 more people laughing really doesn't seem to be a great change in the country. I mean, I don't know that I have the market cornered on getting people to laugh more, but I don't hear a lot out there on the radio about this other stuff I'm talking about. If I heard more out there, I wouldn't care so much. I'd say, well, there are other guys doing this on the radio, but while that show after me, Coast to Coast, dabbles in it a little bit, boy, there ought to be whole radio shows devoted to this stuff. And I'm not talking Dr. Dean Adele. I'm not talking that kind of fraud AMA medical stuff where they're just pitching the party line. I mean the cutting-edge frontier things people are learning all over the world that are showing such incredible results that people aren't even losing patients anymore in diseases that used to wipe out people left and right. And it's happening. And in 2005, it's happening. But you'll not hear about it. Because your doc won't tell you about it, and if you start to look on the internet, he'll tell you not to. It's all BS. It's all quackery. Listen to it. Don't read it. Don't look at it.
Do you think it's true the doctors themselves aren't aware of some of this? Or are you saying some of them?
The doctors went to a medical school that was funded by pharmaceutical companies, and they were learning from studies funded by pharmaceutical companies, and they came out of medical school trained in a way of thinking that they believe to be right, and it's very hard for them to waver from that, and it's very hard for them to question that maybe a lot of what they taught isn't going to turn out to be true, though we certainly have learned over the years that from decade to decade, century to century, what doctors were taught has turned out not to be true often. They mean well, but they, as Dr. Lorraine Day, an MD herself, said, they mean well, but they are programmed to believe a certain way by vested interests who are really looking to make one hell of a lot of money. And while the doctors themselves may be about healing people, they're trained by an industry that's into making a ton of money. And those pharmaceutical companies, you cannot stress enough what would happen to some of this industry if, say, tomorrow I could present for you a cure for cancer that turned out to be a plant. You cannot patent a plant. You would see a depression, an economic collapse worldwide. I mean, if these pharmaceutical companies and these doctors and these hospitals suddenly aren't as necessary because there are natural remedies and people can kind of become their own doctors. There's too many people who don't have an interest in seeing that happen for the word to be out there. And I'm telling you, I have talked to people, many people, good people, who've had their lives threatened for pursuing things that were going to threaten the industry, the medical industry. And that's spooky stuff. That's Kennedy assassination, conspiracy, goofy stuff. But if it were one person, two people, three, I'd say, they're making it up. But you start running into dozens of them and hearing the same story all over the place and talking to people in Europe and hearing crazy stories there and talking to medical researchers in France and talking to people down in Peru and Brazil, and you start hearing and you start connecting the dots and realizing, my God, the greatest ways to heal out there make the least amount of money for people. And the worst ways to heal out there make people the most money. That's crazy. It's a crazy system.